Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, March 14th, 2018. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Dave, I'm glad you're here. And you're at South by Southwest in Austin this week.
I am in Austin this week. That's right. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, it's been, I've been here since Saturday, which was one day into the interactive festival. And I will be here through Sunday or through Saturday, leaving Sunday, which will round out the entirety of the festival. So South by Southwest Conference and Festivals is what they call this now. And that's an appropriate name because it really is, gosh, you could argue that it's five shows happening sort of at once or coincidentally or in a string, really. There is the, I guess the oldest, but certainly the most famous, I think, portion of South by Southwest is their music festival, although it could be argued that any of them are more famous to you in particular. And that will round out the week. That actually sort of kicked off last night. And there's a stretch of Austin downtown centering on an area called Sixth Street, but certainly spilling around that, that has just, I think it's over 100 nightclubs, and it might be significantly over that now, where you can just walk down the street on any weekend and most weeknights and just see a band, a different band in each club, just, you know, one after the other. So it makes Austin very uniquely qualified to have a music festival where you're bringing in, you know, I think there's over 2,000 bands that will have played here by the end of the week. Yeah. And there have been great stories from South by Southwest in the past of young artists coming here and getting the exposure of, you know, a record label executive or someone that, that brings them to the next level, maybe even just a manager or something like that. So that ostensibly that's what that's about, but it's also just a great place to come if you like to see music. Because in any given club, there's five bands a night playing. And yeah, I've always kind of felt, even if you don't like a band, or even if you don't like their style of music, you know, you're only going to see 40 minutes of them. They're going to go put their best 40 minutes out there because that might be their only 40 minutes of playing for their entire trip here. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, there like there's got to be something in that. And I've seen some really interesting bands over the years doing this. So that's the end of the week that sort of the main reason for me being here on behalf of TMO is what has now just wrapped up, which starts at the beginning of the thing, started on Friday, which is what they call their interactive festival, or conference, where there are all sorts of sessions about all sorts of things and all sorts of great speakers and presenters and a lot of people thinking about a lot of different topics and a lot of discussion. And that has been very interesting. Some of the big names that I got to see this week was, well, of course, yesterday I saw Apple's Eddie Q speak. Was that yesterday? The days run together, Jeff. I think it was Monday.
That was on Monday.
It was Monday. Yeah, so it was 2 days ago. No. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was Monday.
It was Monday. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And Eddie Q was interesting. I can just sort of go through a rundown, or if you have questions, feel free to, you know, prompt me in anything specific.
Well, tell me what it was like actually getting to see Eddie Q in person, because I think that's the first time that you've seen him speak in person. Is that right?
I've seen him at Apple events where bring him on stage,
but other than Apple events.
Yeah, it definitely was the first time. Yeah. And it was done in a sort of fireside chat interview style thing. Dylan Byers from CNN, led the interview, and it was interesting. It started about 30 minutes after the news hit that Apple had acquired Texture, the magazine app in the that's been in the iOS store.
Yeah, we talked about that on the show yesterday. So I'll include a link to the show notes so people can check that out.
Perfect. Yeah. Dylan Byers was interesting seeing him interview Eddie Q. Eddie had some interesting things to say. Dylan Byers wanted him to say more. And that got a little strained at times.
Oh, I'm sure. I get it. You ask Eddie Q once to talk about future products. You let him say he can't do it. Now you've done that checkbox and you move on.
Yeah. I mean, he had some interesting things to say. You know, Eddie's a seasoned and well-coached professional. Mm-hmm. So he knows what to say without it being any more awkward than it needs to be. One of the first things Byers asked him was, you know, so many things leak these days. And there's, you know, even just rumors of acquisitions that people might, you know, might resonate with people. And this one, there was no leak whatsoever. Eddie's response was, well, this is one of those acquisitions where it's literally about the media. So maybe that had something to do with it. But when the first time Dylan Byers pressed Eddie for info on future products, Eddie said, you know, I've been working here at Apple. This year will make 30 years, he says, and I hope to spend at least another 20. So I'm not going to answer any questions about future products.
What a great way to answer the question.
Yeah. And he would routinely kind of move things in different directions if he didn't like the question. There wasn't a lot of substance to what Eddie Q said, except when digging into their guidelines, he did have quite a bit to say about that. And it was pretty interesting hearing him talk about how Apple believes in free speech with limitations. He said something about, we don't believe that white supremacist speech or hate speech is the kind of free speech that we want on our platform. That was interesting. And he says,
I find that very interesting.
Yeah. He says everyone is subject to the same review guidelines, whether you're, you know, and he of course said CNN because that's who was interviewing him. Said, you know, they apply to you whether you're CNN or a one man shop developer. And, interesting that they know they're the gatekeepers. Like, this is, and it's a job that they certainly have bestowed upon themselves, whether people wanted them to do it or not. But I think some people want them to do it, and they certainly believe that people want them to do it. And he said, you know, we don't allow bomb making apps in the App Store, even though you're not actually making a bomb. You're just teaching people how to make one. Mm-hmm. He's like, we draw those lines.
Okay, I have a question for you, because this isn't something I've seen, or I didn't see in your piece, and mm-hmm. I'm just curious if it came up at all. With Apple's, I'll call it curation of the types of content we have access to, did Eddie talk at all about Apple TV and the different types of channels that some people are complaining about now in light of recent mass shootings, you know, like gun related channels, and why those are on Apple TV?
The NRA's channel specifically.
Like the NRA channel specifically. Yep.
Yeah. They did talk about it, and he said, well, yeah, you know, that they are, they're a source that some people want to get content from. Their content and the way their app works and all of that fits our guidelines, and we're going to continue to allow that.
Okay, well, it's interesting. I find that an interesting balance, saying, well, no bomb making apps, but pro gun, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with that over time. But I'm glad he addressed it directly.
Yeah, exactly. These things, as we have seen, are allowed to evolve by Apple. We have to remember that the final decision is always Apple's, but they are allowed to evolve, and Apple, you know, sort of gives themselves that permission to review these at any time, and has done that in the past. So, yeah, it's interesting. He also talked quite a bit about streaming music. You know, Dylan Byers kept asking him, do you regret not buying, or do you want to acquire Netflix or Spotify? You know, you certainly could. And, you know, Eddie's response was, they're great partners, you know. And so then Byers took it in a different direction and said, you know, do you wish you had nipped Spotify in the bud years ago? And Eddie's response was very interesting. It was clearly something he had thought about. And he said, you know, we have 38 million subscribers that have given us a payment method. He acknowledged that Spotify has about double that, which mm-hmm. is true. Mm-hmm. And he said, but, you know, that's 100 million on board. He said, there are, you know, by Apple's calculations, 2 billion people amongst those of us in the world that could pay for music. And we have 100 million on board. He says, there's a lot of room for growth here, which I thought was interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, you know, probably wisely, he sees competition like Spotify at this point as sort of helpful competition, because they need to expand this market dramatically, and having someone else out there fighting the good fight for you and legitimizing the class of product that you're putting out there, that's very helpful. You know, I don't think this is something one company should do alone. Could they? I don't know. I mean, changing public sentiment is a big thing. I think you kind of do need partners in that, even if they're competitive partners, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. I remember yeah. seeing that in the retail space years ago. The big right. example I had was REI and EMS, both outdoor gear companies. And you'd see the two stores in the same strip mall.
Right.
And it's because both of them being there benefited each company.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's true. Yeah.
It seems like the same thing here.
I really think so. You know, I hadn't thought about the market being so small, but it is. So, yeah. Yeah. And then Byers asked him about the HomePod. He said, and the question, of course, was, you know, very leading question, where he says, you know, the HomePod didn't sell as well. What are your thoughts about that? Of course, Eddie Q deftly rejected the premise and said, you know, we're very pleased with the HomePod. It's a new category of product. It's by far the best sounding speaker on the planet available today. Those are the words Eddie Q said.
Wow.
There were quite a few groans from the crowd. Like, come on, Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even think Steve could sell us that particular line, but you know, and he said, he also said something interesting, which sort of shows where Apple, to borrow a metaphor that was used many times during this talk, shows where Apple is skating towards with this, you know, with their whole Gretzky's idea of skating to where the puck is going to be. He said, it's the best musicologist in the world. And his example was, you can be listening to Born to Run and ask Siri, who was the drummer on this track? And you know, evidently Siri will give you the answer. So I returned my HomePod, so I can't.
I was going to ask if you did return your HomePod, because I remember you're saying you thought you would.
Yeah, you know, it sat there for almost 2 weeks after my initial testing, and I thought, this is silly. There's no reason to have this just collecting dust if and when there's, you know, a new feature that rolls out or something that I want to test, I'll just buy it again, which is fine. Yeah.
I kept mine. But for me, it was more than just, oh, well, if I've got it, I can be doing tests on stuff. I can test out new features right away. It turns out for MySpace, it's the best streaming music device I can use.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've had this conversation several times. There's nothing in the HomePod. In fact, it is a great sounding speaker that does a great job with Apple Music, and there's nothing wrong with it. It just, I had already solved this problem a different way, and integrating another type of solution turned out to be unnecessary. So anyway, for those of you that do want to test it, contrary to what is often popular belief, Max Weinberg was not the drummer on Born to Run. It was Boom Carter was the drummer on that. So almost like a prog rock drummer, which if you listen to the part, it will make sense to you. So anyway, I might have just gotten too geeky, but I am here for the music festival at South by Southwest. So,
yeah, so
I need totally to start shifting my mind. Yep.
Yeah.
There is a film festival that runs sort of along the whole thing because films take a long time to watch, just by nature of them being, you know, generally, you know, almost 2 hours long or sometimes longer. There weren't really any, some years there have been films like one of the Steve Jobs films premiered here a few years ago. There have not been anything like that, although Ready Player One did premiere here on Sunday. I was not able to get into that. Anyway, but that did premiere here, and there have been some other films that obviously that have premiered here that have been very interesting, but not necessarily relevant to our crowd here. So
we still have just a few minutes left. Do you want to talk about Elon Musk?
I do. Yeah. So I got to see Elon Musk on Sunday. That was South by Southwest has gotten into more and more of a habit of wanting to surprise people. So I'm sure there are more surprises coming as this week rolls out. But on Saturday, Elon Musk showed up at, it was the Westworld panel, I think.
I believe that's right.
Yep. Or Saturday he showed up at the Westworld panel. And then after that, they announced that he was going to give his own fireside chat sort of talk on Sunday at a very, very large theater, the Moody Theater, which is where they film Austin City Limits now.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And tickets where there was a instruction path of how to get tickets. And I was able to get one and went and saw him. And, you know, it was interesting. I didn't know what to expect, but my expectations about Elon Musk were wrong. I'd never seen him in person before. I'd only seen him doing product announcements on, you know, live streaming or YouTube or whatever. And always thought he was sort of a clumsy speaker, but clearly understood his products. And certainly charismatic. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not as clumsy as I seem to remember. I think maybe the times I've seen him, maybe he just doesn't prepare as much for his product announcements as he could. Maybe he doesn't rehearse them like we got used to seeing Steve Jobs rehearse them, which I think is a pattern that Apple sticks to now. They rehearse obsessively for their product announcements. I don't think Elon Musk quite goes to that extreme, but he was a very personable guy, very affable, very engaging, very I don't want to say self-deprecating, but there was a level of humility and awareness of who he is.
Okay.
I think is a better way to say it. He's not really a humble person, but he's also not, wasn't really a jerk about things, but he was making jokes and talking through, and he had a lot of, the subject matter kind of ran all over the place. One of the interesting things to me, they were talking about, they asked him what one of his favorite mistakes was, I think, or something he wished he could do over again. And he said, when we were starting SpaceX, we needed to hire a chief rocket engineer. And he said, you know, we looked around and all the good ones were way more expensive than we could afford. And he said, of course, I didn't want to hire a bad one because what's the point of wasting our money on a bad engineer?
Sure.
He says, so I became the chief engineer. And that shocked me. I had always viewed him through the Steve Jobs, like, you know, a charismatic company founder, good marketer, you know, very obviously in a very different way, but certainly a good marketer. You know, he gets us excited about his products. But I understood the tech, but I didn't think that he really like could do the tech. you know, kind of like Steve Jobs. And as it turns out, no. And even to this day, he says at SpaceX, 80 to 90% of his time is spent on product and engineering.
So he has people to run the company. People so that run, he can yes. be an engineer.
That's correct. Which is very interesting. And talk about a level of self-awareness, right? I mean, we see it so many times where, you know, in companies of varying sizes, where the company started by a, you know, engineering type, the hands-on, let's get it done type. And then as the company grows, that person says, okay, now I want to be in charge of the big picture. Somebody else can do the grunt work. And oftentimes we see those companies fail. Not always, certainly, but a lot of times we do, because it was that engineering talent or that hands-on talent from that particular person that was the thing that drove this company forward. And now you've literally taken that out of the mix. Well, not so much. Not so much at SpaceX, and I would assume Tesla is very similar in that sense. So, yeah. And that's where I say, you know, humility. He doesn't feel like he needs to be the business owner. That just sits back and conducts the orchestra. I'm sure there's some level of that, of course. But,
of course.
But he's very much willing to go and play the instruments and even makes that his primary job and has someone else as the conductor, which is interesting.
It is. I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it really blew me away.
Yeah. I never would have thought of Elon Musk as a rocket engineer.
Correct.
But here we are.
Yeah, think about how smart that means he is, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, right, he decided, well, I don't have a chief rocket engineer, so he, you know, basically in a moment decided, I will be a rocket scientist. And, I would say the proof's in the pudding. Yeah, I mean, his company was the first one to land two booster rockets, you know, after they had been, quote unquote, used up.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. That's an understatement. That is what makes SpaceX different, is their obsession with rapid reusability. That's what's going to make things more affordable, faster turnaround, all of that stuff. That rapid reusability that SpaceX is obsessed with is the difference maker. The fact that they built a rocket and, you know, put it into orbit, okay, cool. We've done that before. There was a blueprint for that. Cool that it was done by a private company, and there's a lot of kudos that they deserve. But that's not revolutionary. But figuring out how not to be wasteful with all these other things that we've previously just ditched, that is the, if it's not revolutionary, it's certainly a big evolutionary step. So
I'm willing to call it revolutionary.
It really, yeah. Watching that video with those two boosters landing, that has me leaning towards it as well. Yeah.
We're out of time.
Awesome. That was easy.
That was, I knew it would be easy. All I had to do was start recording and let you run, because there are so many interesting things you got to see at South by Southwest.
And feel free to send in your questions, because I'm still here. There are still things going on that are very much relevant to the audience here, even though the interactive part has sort of wound down, but yeah, there'll be more to talk about too, I'm sure.
Awesome. Well, then I'm going to assume that you're going to find more interesting things that we need to share on the show. So let's plan on doing a follow-up.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for being here. And listeners, thank you for joining us. And if you want to shoot us messages and let you know what you want to know about, you can do that on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can send over emails, and Dave will get to see those too. Observations@macobserver.com. And then, of course, you can leave comments in the show notes. So listeners, thanks for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.